Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The American healthcare system is marked by complexity, but it was not created this way. It was also not created as expensive as it is in its origins. It evolved to become this way over a 100-year period. There's nothing inherent in the way it evolved. It could have been different, but many decisions, often made for reasons having nothing to do with improving healthcare, shape the healthcare system we have today. Explaining how it works and how it doesn't work, its problems, attempts to reform it, and how recent reforms may transform it requires considering an unusual combination of topics. And Dr. Zeke Emanuel does just this in his book, Reinventing American Healthcare. His work is truly an amalgam of history, health economics, sociology, contemporary politics, policy analysis, and forecasting that defies simple categorization. How did we get here? What's surprising about the history of healthcare reform in the U.S.? What about the implementation problems of the Affordable Health Care Act? And what are the six mega trends in healthcare? Today, we'll explore these questions and more with Dr. Zeke Emanuel, author of Reinventing American Healthcare. Dr. Emanuel, welcome to the show.
Lovely to be here.
Zeke, the first part of your book focuses on the American healthcare system and describes how we got here, how we got the system we have today. Could you briefly identify the key reasons? What are some of the decisions that got us to where we are today?
Yeah, well, one of the points I like to make is that many of the decisions and the evolution were not made, you know, thinking about the long-term future and how it would structure the system, but were, you know, decisions of the moment to get out of a particular jam. So you really have to go back to the sort of turn of the 19th to 20th century. That was a moment in history where medicine was really beginning to take off in terms of scientific and clinical advances, the development of anesthesia and safer surgery, antisepsis and aseptic techniques that allowed control of infection. So every time you went into the operating room, you weren't becoming infected. Really transformed hospitals and allowed doctors to begin doing things therapeutically. Previously, hospitals were really places that poor people went to. A doctor sort of experimented or got clinical experience on them. It wasn't the place where the middle class or rich people went. At the turn of the century, suddenly with safe surgery, the germ theory of infection, x-rays came in 1895. You had hospitals and doctors being able to do things. And that made hospitals much more viable. Simultaneously, in 1910, you had the Flexner Report, which says, ooh, we got to train doctors differently. Now science matters. We need to have them have college education, 2 years of preclinical training, 2 years of experience on the wards. We need a professional faculty, not just practitioners who are sort of doing this on the side to make money. And so you really get a boom in the sort of professional authority and expertise of doctors, middle class and rich people supporting hospitals and finding hospitals effective. And then fast forward, after World War II, you get the federal government through the Hill-Burton Act pumping a lot of money into the building of hospitals. It's estimated that in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, about a third of all hospital expenditures were supplemented by the federal government. You also have the growth in the NIH after World War II, so new scientific advances, and more prestige to the medical profession and more earning power to the medical profession. And then finally, you know, as sort of a cherry on top, you have the growth of insurance, Medicare and Medicaid, which pour a lot more money into healthcare, especially Medicare. So you have another expansion of hospitals, expansion of facilities, and more things doctors can do, all of which are also simultaneously driving up the cost. So it's a very complex thing, beginning with the advances in science, then going to sort of the advances in medical education, fueled by the government subsidizing or putting a lot more money into healthcare. And this creates this sort of positive reinforcement that the more you can do, the more money is going into it, the more creating more possibilities of treatments and tests and advances and people putting more money into it. And that really is a way that we got here, most of which was not, you know, thought out in a big strategic plan the way a company would do. Is what kind of healthcare system do we want, and what do we do now to develop it?
Would you describe the five problems with the U.S. healthcare system as outlined in your book?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we have the sort of traditional problems of access, quality, and cost. So on the access side, we had a system that, you know, 50 or so million people living in America did not have health insurance. They still got a lot of health care, not as much as they would if they had health insurance. But a lot of them don't have insurance. It creates financial difficulties for them. It puts costs on the rest of us when they go to hospitals and they don't pay the bill, and hospitals shift that uncompensated care to us, the government, and others. And that is a serious problem. We know it also affects their health, that if you don't have insurance, you actually have a higher chance of dying and a higher chance of having conditions not addressed. Second, we have quality issues. We have pinnacles of greatness in this country at our leading institutions that are, you know, the envy of the world. But we also have a lot of bad quality care and quality that we are not proud of at all. The number of people who die from hospital-acquired infections and medication errors and a whole series of other problems, I think, very common. And then I would even put in on the quality side, we have bad service. You know, we have a lot of the healthcare system that just hasn't caught up to the 21st century in terms of service provision, because hospitals and doctors think, you know, patients are coming to me, they should wait on me, rather than, you know, making it patient-centric. What's good for the patient? So I think there's, you know, a lot of quality problems that we can't be proud of. And then we have cost problems. We spend $2.97 trillion on healthcare. That makes the United States healthcare system the fifth largest economy in the world. We spend more on healthcare than the entire French economy, and we're catching up to Germany. It's not a matter of not enough money in the system. It's a matter of too much money in the system. Healthcare has been growing much faster than the economy for the last 50 years, really since Medicare came into existence, and it's robbing lots of other programs. It's taking money away from wages. It's taking money away from states' funding of higher education. It's putting our federal government in real financial debt problems. So high costs are not benign. It's not like, well, you know, if we spend more on healthcare, people, it'll be good. That's not true. There are opportunity costs to spending so much on healthcare, and those are very, very serious. And they're things I think most Americans care about. We care that we have a good higher education system, that people can go to college without going hugely into debt. We care about the shrinking middle class. We care about the national debt. We don't want to look like Greece. And then there are other problems. There are problems of transparency about cost and quality. You have no idea what the total cost of, you know, say, cancer chemotherapy is going to be for you. You have no idea what the cost of a knee replacement is. And plus, you can't measure or assess or determine quality of care of a hospital, much less a doctor. And so we often make the choices of which doctor we go to or which hospital we go to in some of the most haphazard ways. If we think healthcare is very vital to our being, you know, we should have much more data. And the last point I make is, you know, that we have a malpractice system that doesn't work for anyone. Doesn't work for patients, doesn't work for doctors. It is completely broken. If you're a doctor, you know, even in a very low-risk specialty, pediatrics, psychiatry, dermatology, your chance of being sued over the course of your career, 70%. And in a high-risk profession like cardiac surgery or neurosurgery, it's 100%. That's not a really good system. And second, if you're a patient and you get injured, you know, you might not file a claim because you don't know whether you get compensated. It'll take a very long time. How much you get compensated is totally haphazard. You know, that's just not a good way. And none of it is making the system safer. So we need a better system there, too. I mean, the American healthcare system is really nothing to be proud of, the way it's organized or disorganized, as the case may be.
What about the implementation problems of the Affordable Care Act? We'll explore this question and much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.